Jambo!
Oliva Jambo!
Teta Lobota! Oliva Jambo!
Oliva Jambo! Teta Lobota!
Kulumanela Sobota! Kulumanela Sobota!
Just how far has South Africa come since the June 16th Soweto Youth Uprising? As the country marks Youth Day, the uprising that began in Soweto and spread countrywide profoundly changed the socio-political landscape in South Africa. Events that triggered the uprising can be traced back to policies of the apartheid government that resulted in the introduction of the Bantu Education Act in 1953. With this came the rise of the Black Consciousness Movement and the formation of the South African Students' Organization, which raised the political consciousness of many students, while others joined the wave of anti-apartheid sentiment within the student community. Now, when the language of Afrikaans alongside English was made compulsory as a medium of instruction in schools in 1974, black students began mobilizing themselves. On June 16, 1976, between 3,000 and 10,000 students mobilized by the South African Students' Movement, supported by the BCM, marched peacefully to demonstrate and protest against the government's directive. The march was meant to culminate at a rally in Orlando Stadium.
Was started in 1974 with what they called, you know, the Bantu Education and Language Decree. And then, you know, in 1975, you know, there were strong talks again all the way until 1976. When we heard that it was going to be enforced, you know, some of us approached the teachers to intervene. But, you know, those days, you know, if you were black African, you know, versus the apartheid government, your interventions were not particularly taken very serious. We realized that, you know, some of the teachers we spoke to indicated that, look, there's nothing they can do.
However, on the pathway, they were met by heavily armed police who fired tear gas and later live ammunition on demonstrating students. This resulted in a widespread revolt that turned into an uprising against the government. Now, while the uprising began in Soweto, it spread like wildfire across the country and carried out until the next year. The aftermath of the events of June 16, 1976 had dire consequences for the apartheid government, as images of police firing on peacefully demonstrating students led an international revulsion against South Africa as its brutality was finally exposed. Meanwhile, the weakened and exiled liberation movements received new recruits fleeing political persecution, giving impetus to the struggle against apartheid.
This was a huge problem. The teachers themselves couldn't understand Afrikaans. They couldn't teach in Afrikaans. The students themselves, it was worse of the subjects if they're in Afrikaans. That's why it collapsed. It didn't work.
The word Bantu in the term Bantu education is highly charged politically and has derogatory connotations. The Bantu educational system was designed to train and fit Africans for the role in the newly, or 1948, evolving apartheid society. Education was viewed as a part of the overall apartheid system, including homelands, urban restrictions, pass laws, and job reservations. This role was one of the labourer, worker, and servant only. As Hendrik Verwoerd, the architect of the Bantu Education Act 1953, conceived it, quoted as saying, "There is no place for the African in the European community above the level of certain forms of labour. It's of no avail for him to receive a training which has its aim, absorption in the European community." End quote.
Away with Afrikaans, away!
Away!
Away with Afrikaans, away!
Away!
Away with Afrikaans, away!
Away!
It It is mistaken, however, to understand that there was no pre-apartheid educational marginalization of black South Africans. Long before the historic 1948 white elections that gave the Nationalist Party power, there was a system of segregated and unequal education in the country. Now, while white schooling was free, compulsory, and expanding, black education was sorely neglected. Financial underprovision and an urban influx led to gravely insufficient schooling facilities, teachers, and educational materials, as well as students' absenteeism or non-enrollment. Now, a 1936 inquiry identified these problems, only to have almost nothing done about these needs.
I will not be intimidated, and instructions have been given to maintain law and order at all costs. Those educational institutions at which blacks are destroying their own amenities will be closed.
Presumably, not all students of the earlier generation worshipped the school authorities. The first recorded stoppage of lessons, always called strikes in the South African newspapers, and the first riots in African schools occurred in the year 1920. Now, in February of this year, students at the Kilnerton Training Center went on a hunger strike for more food. Down with Afrikaans.
Away with Afrikaans, away! Away with Afrikaans, away! Away with Afrikaans, away!
Now, the countdown to the conflict has begun. The main cause of the protest that started in African schools in the Transvaal at the beginning of 1975 was a directive from the Bantu Education Department that Afrikaans had to be used on an equal basis with English as one of the languages of instruction in the department's secondary schools. Now, the introduction of Afrikaans alongside English as a medium of instruction is considered the immediate cause of the Soweto uprising, but there are various factors behind the 1976 student protest.
Our policy is one which is called by an Afrikaans word apartheid.
These factors can certainly be tracked back to the Bantu Education Act, introduced by the apartheid government in 1953. Now, the act introduced a new department of Bantu Education, which was integrated into the Department of Native Affairs under Hendrik Verwoerd. Now, the provisions of the Bantu Education Act and some policy statements made by the Bantu Education Department were directly responsible for the uprising, and Verwoerd, who engineered the Bantu Education Act, announced that natives or blacks must be taught from an early age that equality with Europeans or whites is not for them. Although the Bantu Education Act made it easier for more children to attend school in Soweto than it had been with the missionary system of education, there was a great deal of discontent about the lack of facilities. Now, throughout the country, there was a dire shortage of classrooms for black children. There was also a lack of teachers, and many of the teachers were underqualified. Now, nationally, pupil-to-teacher ratios went up from 46 to 1 in 1955 to 58 to 1 in 1967. Now, government was spending far more on white education than on black education. 644 rand was spent annually for each white student, while only 42 rand was budgeted for a black school child. Now, in 1976, there were 258,000 pupils enrolled in Form 1 at high schools, which had a capacity for only 38,000 students.
Because of apartheid to a large extent, a lot of the math and science skills had not been properly developed.
There is still a tremendous gap between the haves and the have-nots, maybe no longer racially based, but still based on people that have access to resources for themselves and their children and people who don't.
To alleviate the situation, pupils who had passed their Standard 6 examinations were requested to repeat the standard. This was met with great resentment by the students and their parents. Although the situation did not lead to an immediate revolt, it certainly served to build up tensions prior to the 1976 student uprising. Now, in 1975, government was phasing out the Standard 8 or Junior Certificate. It was in these secondary schools that the 50-50 language rule was to be applied, and the uprising took place at a time when liberation movements were banned throughout the country and South Africa was in the grip of apartheid. Now, the protest started off peacefully in Soweto, but it turned violent when the police opened fire on unarmed students.
Thank you.
Now, it's hard to get a clear picture of what exactly happened on the day of June 16th, as most of the information comes from eyewitness accounts of students who participated, journalists who were on the scene, as well as the police reports on the events. Now, with all this history, a lot depends on the perspective of the person telling the story, as well as those who have subsequently written about it.
It was tough. It was not easy. So my mom, when she went to work in the morning, and she said to us, me and my younger sister, we are not going there because I heard that there's going to be the strike. So we said, okay, we won't be going there. And then we decided to write the placards and hide the placards behind the house. And then when she went out, and then we said, you, we are going. Took our placards, we followed the crowd.
When you saw everybody being shot, how was that? How did you feel?
Ooh, it was painful. It was not an easy sight, really.
Now, at 7 a.m. on June 16th, 1976, not all children who were to participate in the march knew about it on the morning of the 16th. For many, it was an ordinary school day. But by this time, students were feeling frustrated and dissatisfied with the Bantu education system and the introduction of Afrikaans as a medium of instruction. It was exam time for senior students, and many were scared that they would fail exams if they would have to write in Afrikaans. And nonetheless, the march that was planned by the Action Committee was well organized and was to be conducted in a peaceful way.
June 16 was fully planned on the 13th of June, and we're in the streets on the 16th. The question is, why 3 days? Why were you in such a hurry? We knew that if we let it stay longer, you know, the police would then pick up, will know and grab most of us and arrest us. So we needed something that was going to happen quick. And there's something naughty. There was going to be exams. We're writing half-yearly exams. We're going to start with half-yearly exams, June half-yearly exams. So we didn't want to start with half-yearly exams that year. We wanted to go out to the streets and before the half-yearly exams. And mainly because, of course, the half-yearly exams, some of them were going to be in Afrikaans in any way, you know, and what we're fighting against in any way was about, you know, this Afrikaans and that form of education. So we were making our point.
The leaders of the original march mainly came from two high schools, Naledi High in Naledi and Maurice Isaacson in Mofolo. However, Sifiso Ntlovu argues that the main center of organizational activity was Fefeni Junior Secondary, close to Vilakazi Street in Orlando. Fefeni was certainly close to the railway station from which many students got off their trains to join the march, and the plan was that students from Naledi High were to march from their direction and pick up students from the schools on their way. Now, the Maurice and Isaacson students were to march from the school doing the same until they met at a central point where they would proceed peacefully together to the Orlando Stadium. Now, at 7:30, the first student to gather together were at Naledi High. The mood was high-spirited and jovial. At assembly, the principal gave support to the children and wished them good luck. The first chairperson of the Action Committee, Tepelo Motopanyana, addressed them and informed them that discipline and a peaceful march were to be the order of the day. Meanwhile, at Morrison Isaacson, students also gathered. They were also addressed by one of the leaders and Action Committee, Tsietsi Mashinini, and then set out. On the way, they passed by other schools, where some were waiting and those who were not recruited on the spot to join.
We saw police, but we didn't take notice of those police. And as we go on, we were singing, you know, chanting. To us, it was very fun. It was nice. We were so thrilled.
Dan Muyane from Maurice Isaacson High School was quoted as saying, "We were singing and it was jovial. The mood, exciting. And with the placards, we started going." Sam Koza from Ibongo Secondary School was quoted as saying, "The first time we heard of it was during our short break. Our leaders informed the principal that students from Maurice Isaacson was marching. We then joined one of the groups and marched." Now, in the end, there were 11 columns of students marching to Orlando Stadium to meet at the central point of Uncle Tom's Municipal Hall. Now, before this point, there had been some minor skirmishes with police, but it was here that the police stopped them, barricading their path. And other schools had been stopped by the police early on and had dispersed, but managed to join later. At 9 a.m, the march was halted and some people helped Tieti Mashinini climb up onto a tractor so that everyone could see him when he addressed the crowd. He said, "Brothers and sisters, I appeal to you to keep calm and cool. We have just received a report that the police are coming. Don't taunt them. Don't do anything to them. Be cool and calm. We are not fighting." مبروك يا أماني والجو فيها لطيار تحمل لك It was a tense moment for both the police and the students, as police reports stated that the situation was explosive and they retreated to await further reinforcements. Now by 9:30, the students carried on marching until they got to what is now Hector Peterson Square, close to Orlando High School, where the march came to a halt. Now despite the tense atmosphere, students remained calm and well ordered. Suddenly, a white policeman lobbed a tear gas canister into the front of the crowd, and people ran out of the smoke, dazed and coughing. The crowd retreated slightly, but remained facing the police, waving placards and singing. A white policeman then drew his revolver, and black journalists standing by the police heard a shot. There was a split-second silence. Pandemonium broke out. Children screamed. More shots were fired. At least 4 students fell, and others ran screaming in all directions. Now by midday, after the first massacre, the students fled in different directions. Anger at the senseless killings inspired retaliatory action. West Rand administrative vehicles and buildings were set alight and burned to the ground. A white official was pulled out of his car and beaten to death. Bottle stores were burned and looted. Other encounters with the police occurred where more students were killed, especially in the vicinity of the Regina Mhundi Church in Orlando and the Esso Garage in Chiawelo. As students were stopped by the police in one area, they moved their protest action to others. Now by the end of the day, most of Soweto, including Diepkloof, which was relatively quiet during the morning, had felt the impact of the protest. For the students at some schools, this was the first they heard or saw. Schools were closed early at about 12 o'clock, and many students walked out of school to a township on fire. Most of the beer halls were built by the municipality. People were shouting, less liquor, better education. Now fires continued blazing into the night. At about 9 p.m, armored police cars, later known as hippos, started moving into Soweto. Official figures were that 23 people had been killed, but some reports estimated that there was at least 200. Now it's hard to know how many people had been killed because of police efforts to cover up the number of people who had died. The second day was marked by uncontrollable fury and burning hostility. Police also assumed another attitude. They shot at random and at anyone who would raise a fist and shout into their face. Many others joined the original protesters. However, not everyone had heard about Hector Peterson and the others who were killed yet, but the word was spreading. Solomon Marikele from Rulane Senior Primary said that the following day, I picked up stones. I joined the struggle. On the 16th, I just came home and stayed because we formed the slogan, an injury to one is an injury to all. So we were supposed to be there. The heavily biased Salier's report on for this day sums up the events. Schools, trains, buses, delivery vehicles, West Rand administrative buildings, cars of business people, all were targeted. The fury of frustration that had been simmering among township youth had free rein. There was enormous police presence on the morning of the 17th, with close to 1,500 police armed with Sten guns, automatic rifles and hand machine carbines had taken up strategic positions in the township. Helicopters flying overhead, the army was on standby. The police force had never developed other methods of crowd control other than the use of live bullets. The police shot at people indiscriminately, and casualties were even higher than the day before. Now the violent reaction of the police only made the children angrier. At a press conference, Mr. Mani Mulder announced that nearly all the WRAB buildings in Soweto had been destroyed. This amounted to 21 offices being burnt down, 10 being plundered, schools burnt, as well as unknown numbers of municipal halls, beer halls and bottle stores. Now the rand has lost value overnight. Thousands of workers refusing to go to work. It was indeed a crisis for the apartheid government. It is also a serious loss of face in light of US Secretary of State Henry Kissinger's impending visit to South Africa. Now at this point, the political leadership of the Soweto Student Representative Council, SASM, and other organizations were desperately trying to take leadership of the protest and to channel the anger of the youth and to give the movement political direction. The ANC in exile called for immediate international action and the intensification of economic sanctions. The protest action also spread to other townships around Soweto. In Tembisa, students organized a solidarity march, which although heavily guarded did not result in violence. In Kagiso, people tried to stop a gathering of students and adults. The result was a forced retreat and the destruction of more WRAB buildings, vehicles and schools. Now when the police returned with reinforcements, they shot indiscriminately into the crowd, killing at least 5 people. Now on the third day of the uprising on the 18th of June, the situation in Soweto was still volatile. Outside a butchery in Moroka, there were some fatalities, as fires were blazing in many Soweto townships like Zola, Ikwezi, Moletsani, Naledi and Tladi. The administrative buildings, wine stores and beer halls, which were hated by the young people, were also set on fire. Buses and cars running through Soweto were burnt. Police intensified their terror in trying to return the situation to normality in the township. However, this angered the insurgents' young people more and brought them up against heavily armed police. They used stones to counter armor, police cars, helicopters and guns. At about 10 a.m. on the 18th of June, the chairman of the West Rand Administrative Board, Marnie Mulder, was in Soweto to assess the situation.
This is a illegal gathering. The time is now 9:23. You have 3 minutes. At 9:26, you must disintegrate. Thank you very much.
He was escorted by large police vans, and all the WRAB-owned cars that had escaped being burnt were taken out of Soweto after Mulder's visit. The columns of cars drove past Orlando Police Station into the direction of Johannesburg. But in general, the action on this day had already moved to the East and West Rand and Alexandra Township. The people in other parts of the country were not revolting to pledge their solidarity with the people of Soweto. They shared the same problem, the same sorrows, and the same causes of resentment and rebellion. تتحقق الأماني تتحقق الأماني بعد العزم والإصرار والبذل والتفاني تتحقق الأماني تتحقق الأماني. 40 years since the commemoration of National Youth Day in South Africa. This is the day that the country reflects on the massacre of school children during the Soweto Uprising of 1976, when students organized a peaceful march against the Afrikaans Medium Decree issued in 1974, which made it mandatory for black schools to use the Afrikaans language as the medium of instruction. Policy was deeply unpopular, since Afrikaans was regarded by some as the language of the oppressor. It was against this background that 30th April 1976, students from the Orlando West Junior School in Soweto went on strike and boycotted classes. Now by 16th June, their rebellion spread to other schools in Soweto, and incidentally, the student-organized mass rally on this day turned violent, as police responded with bullets to stones thrown by angry students.
Nobody expected that this is going to be a big thing, because it was just a student's march. The student was just going to register their concern, to write a memorandum to submit it to the Department of Education. Their aim of marching was to march to Orlando Stadium and gather there to start writing a memorandum while they are together. So they didn't even reach Orlando Stadium. When they reached Orlando...
Now the first student to be shot on that fateful day was 15-year-old Hastings Ndlovu. However, the killing in the same incident of Hector Peterson, age 12, and in particular the publication of his photograph taken by Sam Nzima, made him an international icon of the uprising. It became the major rallying point of the struggle against apartheid.
I still ask, as in that song, Senze Nina. I don't know what did we do that was that worse, to deserve a bullet instead of a book.
So as we mark 40 years since the uprising, which changed the landscape and the outlook for the future of this country forever, just how far has South Africa and the South African government gone for the youth of this country in terms of unifying and creating equal opportunities for all? This is the question I leave with you. Mohammed Amin reporting for Radio Islam News.
Ordinary South Africans are determined that the past be known, the better to ensure that it is not repeated. They seek this not out of vengeance, but so that we can move into the future together.